good morning, and thanks for tuning in KSLM this fine day here on 104.3 FM and 1220 AM as we now present Good Morning Salem with Stacy Ann.
Oh, good morning to you. Are you sipping on your cup of coffee this morning? It's a warm morning. Oh, my goodness. Almost 60 degrees already this morning. Going to warm up to about 92 degrees. Hello, I'm Stacy Ann. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio. And we are together on this second day of September. And if it's your birthday today, happy birthday to you. And we are moving right along and right around the corner. Oh, my gosh. I know it. It's here. It's my favorite season. And I am so looking forward to experiencing it right here in the Pacific Northwest. Yes, fall. And I don't know, as I was driving around yesterday and maybe the day before when I was taking a tour to the coast, I think the colors are starting to change a little bit. I think the trees are turning a little yellow and golden, and it's interesting. I can feel it in the air. And typically, right, typically this time of year when we stroll down the community, maybe around, I think of Sprague, where I went to high school, you roll down Kubler, you know, that big old hill, if you've ever been to that part, and you roll down and you come up the other side and you look over, and normally you would see football players preparing, right? You would see kids out and about getting ready for school and all of those kinds of things. We are in a really interesting time, friends. And looking at the headlines today, I mean, more riots in Portland and more yada, yada, yada of, oh, you know, flatten the curve and the COVID and the threat of COVID. And the most interesting headline, which is of no surprise to us, right? Governor Kate Brown extends the emergency through November 3rd. Very interesting timing, right? And so basically, she has the authority, I guess. I mean, we've tried it as a state. We've tried to challenge it in court, and we've tried to do all of these things to say, no, you are overextending your authority. And it seems like everyday Oregonians like you and I, we just kind of get pushed back, right? Even in our attempts to get petitions gathered and try to get signatures amongst this shutdown, it seems like, man, when are we going to catch a break? Do you feel that a little bit? I think some of us are feeling that. I think a lot of us are feeling that. And yet, here I am. I want to say, and I will continue to say, it's easy to curse the darkness and throw out all the things that are going wrong in society, but there are a lot of good things going on. There's some amazing things going on, and you have to have your eyes to see it. You have to be coaching yourself in a sense to say, you know, I'm not going to let this, because then she wins, right? Or that spirit, because we know this battle is not necessarily flesh and blood, although we feel like it's really heavy, right? It's a spiritual thing going on, and they win when we let it get us down. And so we've got to stay together. We've got to stay positive. We got to focus on what we know we can do today. And here's what I know we can do today. We can make sure that we're registered to vote. Our voter registration is correct and current. And then we can tell 10 people today, 10 people today, talk to them, have conversation with them about why they believe what they believe, and see if there's any wiggle room at all to challenge them to go and look for themselves, look at the facts themselves, to dig up history, to look at what they can do to get the facts straight, right? And maybe they'd be open to thinking differently or voting differently. Because I still think we, and maybe I call me Pollyanna, but I still think we can make a major shift in November at this election at the ballot box. And I know we're in an uphill battle. We're struggling with the fact that, you know, there's a plan, there's an agenda out there, whether we realize it or not, or maybe we're just becoming quote unquote woke to a master plan that's been going on for many years to change everything we know about America. Absolutely everything we know about America. And so in the effort to bring encouragement, engagement, education to you and I here on the morning show, I am continuing to look for amazing guests that bring insight and perspective to what we're going through and walking through at this time. And I'm excited to present to you my friend James. And I'll tell you a little bit about him. He's a writer, a musician, a historian. He is currently a graduate student at Portland State University working on his thesis, which traces the relationship between rights, values, and judicial review, and explores the evolution of civil rights in American history. His work has been featured at New Discourses, Pure Insights, and the Oregon Encyclopedia. And you can find more of his work at historykillers.com. And James, thank you for joining me today. Good morning to you, and welcome to the morning show.
Good morning. It's nice to be here.
Yes. And so tell me, how do you say your last name? I usually ask right when we get going.
Masnov. Hard S, long O. So Masnov.
Masnov, James Masnov. And do you always go by James, or does he sometimes go by Jim?
Always James.
Always James.
Thank
James,
you for asking.
Yes, James is a big family name. My grandfather was James, but he went by Jim. And my brother's middle name was James. My dad's middle name is James. So welcome, James.
Thank you.
So when we talk about what's going on currently, when we look at the headlines and world events, not just in the Pacific Northwest, but we look at globally, many of us have been conditioned to evaluate what's happening in our culture through the lenses that we wear, right? Through our own, and how that develops, and of course, this is my background now in sociology, but how that develops is our personal experiences, good and bad and the ugly, right? All of that, our family influence, our our education, all of those kinds of things. And so I believe that there has been an awareness that it's almost like the rewrite of history is happening. We're seeing this shift, and you're addressing this through your writing. Talk to me a little bit about that.
New Discourses has published two in a series of articles I've been writing called History Killers, which is all about this idea of there are certain groups and certain individuals who, for political aims, are seeking to manipulate or erase history.
Mm-hmm.
And I see it all over the place, and as an historian, it's especially concerning to me because I value the role that history plays, especially in the history of the United States, where knowing our history and having an understanding of rights values is really important to our engagement in our self-governance.
Well, and even this morning, and I looked on a couple articles, and I shared it on my personal page. There was evidence at Elvis Presley's Graceland where there was graffiti up and down. I mean, horrible graffiti on the wall that surrounds and on the sidewalk and all of that. And so you think even in pop culture, history of pop culture and those icons in the past that have been so significant in our lives. I mean, we can't even imagine graffiti there, let alone watch it. And then these younger kids that participated and made that happen, they have no clue. There's no attachment. There's just like this, that's old school and it doesn't matter. And my message is more important than this historic place.
Well, I think that's what's happening now is for a long time, people would sort of push back against this stuff and say, oh, well, it's only happening at universities. It's only happening on college campuses. What's the big deal? And some of us recognize, well, this stuff never stays at the campus. It seeps out into the culture. And that's what's happening now, just what you're talking about. It's not just, as bad as it is that free thought and free exchange of ideas is being hampered, that's bad enough. But now our actual culture is being subverted.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's getting deeper and deeper into our culture that we can't just take certain things for granted anymore.
Well, in the whole premise of the First Amendment right to free speech and be able to declare our thoughts and feelings freely, the part that really gets to me is the whole tolerant issue, being tolerant and being accepting of people in the spirit of love.
Right.
And yet it's only if your message is their message.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And they can't see it.
Mm-hmm.
they don't want to see it. It's okay. If you're with them, you're with them. But if you don't think like them, there is no tolerance.
Well, one of the threats I'm seeing is in journalism. And this was a few years ago. I think this was even before Trump's election. I think it was in 2014 or 2015. MSNBC, who I'm not exactly a fan of, I think it was through their website, they had an article where it finished it out by saying, hate speech is not free speech. And they must have gotten calls from some lawyers or something, because they then had to make a correction. We said that hate speech is not free speech. It is. But what are journalists doing if they don't know the basics of the First Amendment?
That's exactly right. And I believe what has happened, and maybe you and I are probably similar in schooling and experience and even in our education, in that, do you remember in school we would learn about media literacy? We would do, even to the fact that they would have us look at magazines and see the hidden messages inside the commercials,
right,
and things. Do you remember some of that?
I do.
And that it was almost like they taught us as students, and some of this started in high school, some of it in college as I went into some media stuff and sociology stuff, but it was like an aha moment that I can't just take at face value when I'm being told and trusted. I need to investigate. And even remember, they would if we wrote a paper, we had to source it.
Oh, yeah.
We couldn't plagiarize it. All of those kinds of principled things that most students were taught as normal part of their education process, I don't believe that's happening anymore.
Right. And I think that's a byproduct. There's something great about the instant access to information, but the sort of dark side to that is that it gives a lot of people a false sense of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Where this literally happened to me with somebody I knew several years ago. We were debating this issue. And he literally was like, oh, just hang on a second. He looked at his phone and he read two paragraphs off of a Wikipedia page and suddenly thought he knew the entirety of the subject. And I think a lot of people do that now. They think that, well, it's at my fingertips. I'm going to assume it's correct. I don't know where those assumptions come from. But part of it is that, unfortunately, there are some teachers and some professors who allow for things like Wikipedia references and things like that, which is, in my view, a really bad idea.
Well, and here's the reason. Wikipedia can be amended and changed at any moment by anybody.
Right.
So it's not like old school encyclopedias pulling it off of the library, the bookshelf, right?
Mm-hmm.
And where it was researched and definitely authentic. Wikipedia is not that.
No, if anything, it's knowledge and history kind of by consensus,
right,
which is a really dangerous road to go down.
And that's kind of where we're at right now. And I want to continue this conversation when we come back. You're listening to KSLM, and we are News Talk Radio here for you on this day. News that you can use. So glad to have you along. We'll continue the conversation after this. A wonderful conversation today, bringing you encouragement, stirring up our thought process this morning, our critical thinking as we evaluate what's going on in our culture and try to understand it as much as we can. I am so glad to have James here with me in the studio. And you're telling me a little bit, James, that you and your wife decided to go back to college,
mm-hmm,
and pursue kind of a new angle and a new desire. And prior to that, You talked a little bit about being a musician. I'm sure once a musician, always a musician.
Right.
Talk to me a little bit about what you play, and you write songs probably, and you travel. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about that.
Before I kind of redirected myself to pursue history, I was an independent musician with several different bands, and I traveled the country, toured a number of times, and I've produced more than 10 albums of music, of original music,
mm-hmm.
all of which is now available at the band's website. That kind of got pushed off to the side because I wanted to be really serious about my history career,
mm-hmm.
but it's still certainly very important to me, and the band will still get together and perform and stuff from time to time. Less so right now, obviously, for obvious reasons, but yeah.
What's your genre of music?
It's everything from acoustic pop to punk rock and heavy metal to experimental and instrumental and ambient and electronic. It literally goes all over the place.
So what do you play?
I sing, I play guitar, I play bass, I do a little bit of keyboard, and I also play drums.
Fantastic. So many times right now, musicians, they can play on a keyboard many of these instruments and self-publish, or however you call it, self-record,
mm-hmm.
and get through the media of the website, they can release their music and really be a blessing.
Which is fantastic. That's one thing I have to be happy about, sort of modern technology, is that actually just recently we have all of our music available directly from our website for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have to rely on a third party to house our music and stuff.
That's awesome. And what is that website?
MasonicBlock.com. The name of the band is Masonic Block. So yeah, if people just go to MasonicBlock.com, the music page has all of our music available.
Okay. Well, this is fun. A fun little side note on our journey, talking about history and our culture. And you know, when I went back to college too, but I had only been out for a few years, but I'd gotten married and started having children. And I was that non-traditional student,
right.
You know, and all the young ones looked at me like, she's serious about school. She's going to totally throw the curve.
Mm-hmm.
and it was good perspective going back to college as an adult, in a sense, where I had to pay bills, and perspective completely changed. And I loved my history classes. I loved my American history. I loved, you know, government classes and really learning and digging in and understanding. And I think that was the spark that got me so interested in politics and really learning how to evaluate where we're at and where we need to be and how important grassroots activism really is, right where the people are, and helping educate and empower. And so in your research and in the work that you've done, you've talked a little bit about this project called the 1619 Project.
Right.
Talk to us a little bit that, 'cause there's probably people who have no clue what that is.
Yeah. So the first installment of my History Killers series, which is available at New Discourses, is all about the 1619 Project, which is... It presents itself as a history project,
mm-hmm.
first published in August of 2019 by the New York Times Magazine. And the main person behind it is this woman, Nicole Hannah Jones, who works at the New York Times. The problem is that the history, especially in that first essay that got the most attention, is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's not historically accurate, and yet the New York Times published it. And then several months later, I think back in May of 2020, the Pulitzer community gave it the Pulitzer Prize.
Whoa.
Even though members of that committee and people at the New York Times knew that it was inaccurate history. So this brings a lot of questions to the fore, which is why is bad history getting published by a mainstream publication, and why is it being rewarded, you know, despite mm-hmm. its bad history, maybe even because of its bad history. And the basic thesis of that first essay was that the American Revolution was fought on behalf of the Americans to preserve slavery, which is completely not true.
That's right.
And historians all along the political spectrum, it doesn't matter if they're, you know, historians of the right or the left or the center, they all came out and said, this isn't true. It just is not true. And the New York Times ran with it anyway.
Mm.
And in fact, there's a historian at Northwestern, Professor Harris. I'm sorry, I can't remember her first name right now. But she wrote an article for Politico after that essay was published, saying that she had been a fact checker for the New York Times prior to this publication. And she told them this is wrong. Mm. And her field is specifically the history of slavery. So this is her field. She knows. And she told them it was completely inaccurate, and they ignored her and they published it anyway. Mm. So it seems to me that there's a political agenda going here, that it suits the interests of the people involved in the 1619 Project to pretend that the American Revolution was fought in order to defend slavery, because if that were true, then we can denounce the American Revolution. We can denounce the entire American founding.
Mm.
The fact that it's not true is really inconvenient for them.
Right.
My concern is people who don't know about the 1619 Project and happen across it. And I've known some people like this, and they just assume, well, it's published by the New York Times, it's gotten the Pulitzer Prize, it must be true, and it's not.
Right.
So that's why I wanted to write that article.
Well, I think it's profound fact that there's an agenda. We know that there's an agenda. And even in my talking on Facebook with friends and sharing stories and things like that, even talking about Abraham Lincoln and the Republican Party and how we're the party that stood for to end slavery, so many people pipe up and say, oh, well, that's because, you know, blah blah blah, and you know, and they're saying that we weren't, you know, and they're trying to say things like this, use articles that are not accurate, and it to defend their position, and it's just not true. And so I encourage our listeners, we have got to do our research, and we also have to be careful that we don't contribute to wrong facts as well. And I, you know, you pass those stories on along Facebook, and we don't do our own fact checking as well. It works on both sides, but certainly to expose the agenda that's going on is so very important. We're going to continue the conversation after this. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. News that you can use. We'll be back. Enjoying a wonderful day together. Thank you for tuning in. Maybe you're on your second cup of coffee this morning. If you are, I hope it's good. How do you like to drink your coffee? I like to put a little honey and maybe some creamer in mine. And talk about honey. There's some fruit stands and places, farms that have amazing honey. And it's been fun to do little excursions here and there. And we found a wonderful area just off of North River Road, past Kaiser out there, the Jones family. I believe it's a family farm, and found some not only fruit and honey, but also ice cream. Mm. So it was one of my adventures last weekend, and I'm looking forward to my daughter's coming to town this weekend, and she's never been to Oregon before, and she's my youngest out of five. And I'm excited to host her for a week and take her on grand adventures all around this area. And it's fun. I think she's only been on the airplane maybe twice. And this will be, she's bringing a friend with her. So this will be a grand adventure on her own. You know, she just is turning 19. It's kind of a birthday celebration being together. And so I'm excited to have her here. And I've got James here with me. And we're talking about kind of how do we evaluate what's going on and how we believe that there's this agenda. But we just don't believe it. We see it in proof. That to change history or to omit history completely, and not some kind of new fad to say, hey, if we just pretend it wasn't there, we can create new things and we can influence the culture. And I will say, James, having my 19-year-old, almost 19-year-old daughter who has been targeted by social media, and she tends to think more liberal. In fact, I've kind of joked a little bit, maybe I'll have her on the air and conversation with a liberal and be my daughter, you know? And where does she get these things? And she's quick to point to things through the social media, you know, these links as if it's gospel fact. And I'm concerned about our education. I'm concerned about our universities, and you and I having gone to college, and now you working on your thesis and stuff. Have you ever felt in a situation where your professors were really trying to push their thought, like, you need to think like me? Groupthink is one of the things we talk about in sociology. Did you see a lot of that?
Yeah, certainly. Probably more often than not, to be honest. But part of it is that I went back to school later, and I think that that makes not just, I think maybe for some it makes people more hard in their thinking, but for me it made me more open, and it's just that I was more willing to investigate claims, less likely to take things at face value. And I do think that there are some professors, I don't want to say they're all this way, but there are some who know there will be some, especially undergraduates, who will just kind of take the information as gospel,
right,
and not really question it. What I've noticed, I noticed this in my undergraduate experience. I've also noticed it a bit in graduate school. There's an assumption already that everybody already agrees on everything. There's this sort of assumption that everybody's far left, and you know, those are the talking points we're going to work from. It's interesting what you were saying about your daughter. My daughter is 19. My stepdaughter, she's at Linfield, and hopefully through the influence of her mother and myself, she's much more of a critical thinker. And but I have seen a lot of what you're talking about. But it's interesting what you were saying, because I consider myself a liberal, but I note the difference between liberal and progressive.
Right.
Whereas a liberal, and I'm using the term in its historical sense.
Yes.
Of I believe in the maximization of individual rights.
Right.
And so in many ways, what we've seen over the past several years is a sort of alliance among conservatives and liberals in those constitutional, defense of individual rights against a far left progressive movement, which really has less concern for individual rights and is more prone to groupthink, in my opinion, because they think in terms of identities, right? It's this identity politics where that's plug people into whatever their group identity is. And that's, to me, that's very different from a conservative way of thinking, but also very different from a sort of historically liberal way of thinking.
Well, in the liberal, when we talk about that, in the liberal arts college, the whole idea originally in my mind was to get a broad exposure to the facts,
yes,
and to the education, to make an individual, a realization of an individual complete in a sense.
Yeah.
And in my mind, that's the mental, the spiritual, the physical experience, so that you could have a full experience and have a add full value to your community, in my thinking. And so when you talk about liberal, I think that you're absolutely right. I think even conservatives would say this is what lines up. And it's interesting that we've all been put into a box.
Yes.
And that is a problem for me. I still remember in my early activism days when I was working on tobacco-free indoor air stuff with the American Cancer Society, and I had testified somewhere, and the journalist labeled me a conservative. And I'm like, where did that come from? I've never, you know, where did I, you know, and I had to do some, I'm like, whoa, where did this even come from? It wasn't Republican or Democrat, it was conservative. And actually during that time, I would say I lined up more libertarian in my youthful eagerness and individual rights. And, you know, even though I was working on the tobacco issue, which seemed like a conflict, right? But I'd also have people say, I'm shocked. At the time I was registered Republican. I'm shocked. I thought you were a Democrat, you know, and it's all of this stuff. Like you say, the group think people assume certain things by who you associate with. But you, what we got to understand is we all have this individual journey. We all have this experience. We're human. We're spiritual beings having a human experience. Right.
Yeah.
And so we've got to be very careful not to pigeonhole or label people or put them in a box and think that they're always going to stay there, right?
Right, right. There's, especially over the past several years, there's been a deepening of the chasm between so-called right and left. And it's obviously more nuanced and more complicated than that. What I don't like to see is, and I, by the way, I think progressives and liberals and conservatives, to some degree, are guilty of mm-hmm. what I'm about to mention, which is suddenly the Betsy Ross flag is a conservative symbol. Suddenly,
right.
the American Revolution is a conservative cause. Mm. Those are American ideals,
That's right.
And they're not left or right ideals, especially. Because when you get down to every single individual, they care about their individual rights.
Exactly.
But some people are a little bit more wanting to abstract that into identity groups and whatnot. But it concerns me when we look at these quintessentially American ideas, whether they're constitutional rights or American symbology, and with conservatives really overtly embracing those things, which I support. And then liberals being, in my opinion, a bit too silent on the issue, and then mm-hmm. progressives denouncing that stuff, we act as though the American cause is a conservative cause, and historically that's just not true at all.
That is accurate, and I do think, even when I tell people what I do, that I'm on a conservative talk, you know, radio format, it closes people off,
right.
and I want to have the discussion.
Yep.
I want to have the discussion, and we've lost the art of discussion. And even though we have debate in high school and things like that, and people learn how to debate and get to a conclusion and have to have, we've lost that art of discussion and discourse that is honoring.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you don't think like I do, then I don't even need to hear from you.
Mm-hmm.
And I shut you down and I cancel you. And what a sad place to be.
Yeah.
Because we are better when we learn why people think the way they think.
Well, that's why free speech is so important. You know, you can't learn from others if they're not allowed to disagree with you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's exactly true. And I think we again, what we started the segment in talking about all of our life experiences and the things that we, the way we were raised, it helps us, grooms us into the way we think and the mm-hmm. way we process things based on our life experiences and the pain and the places we've been, you know. And I know over my life, I've progressed immensely. And I'm so very thankful for the people that have come along my path to help me learn to be a better person.
Absolutely.
And that's what it's all about. In this season that we're in, wear the mask, isolate, you know, stay away from one another,
mm-hmm.
Be fear-filled. All of that plays into this agenda, right? To go along, to get along, because they know better.
Yeah. Yeah, there's certainly an authoritarian vibe going on
mm-hmm.
right now, for sure.
And so you would think the Antifa,
mm-hmm.
the anti-fascists,
so-called,
in word only,
right?
Because their actions are not of that, right?
Yeah.
It's such a contradiction, and people don't even understand that.
Well, I've noticed that it's kind of an obvious point, but I was able to distill it when I was thinking about this the other day, that all you have to do is call yourself an anti-fascist, and then you can walk around behaving like a fascist.
Exactly.
And all you have to do is call yourself an anti-racist, and then you can have all of the racist policies that you want.
Mm, and that's scary.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's
very Orwellian.
It's that Orwellian, and it's doublespeak.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned this early on in my pro-life work, that a lot of times the websites and the labels, they would say the opposite of what they were actually doing.
Right.
And then that gave them liberty and permission to do it.
Yeah.
And so what are we to do about that?
Well, fight the good fight. You know, that's the small, my small contribution are these articles I'm writing and the historical work I'm doing, whether it's the guest lecturing or the thesis I'm working on right now, which in some ways, honestly, is a liberal defense of the American founding. It's really focused on the influence of rights values upon the American system.
We've got one more segment to go and we'll continue the conversation, but give us your website where we can find these articles.
HistoryKillers.com.
HistoryKillers.com. We're going to continue the conversation. Maybe we'll even open up the phone lines. 503-589-1220. What questions Or how do you want to add to the conversation? Let us know. Conversation this morning. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. I'm Stacey Ann here with James, and we are talking about kind of where we're at, kind of a state of the state of where we're at in our culture. And James, you had written this article just recently. I think it just came out, and I was reviewing it on History Killers. It says Illinois representative calls for the end to history education. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, he's a state representative for Illinois, LaShawn Ford, I believe is his name, and he did a press conference in early August calling for the suspension of all history education in public schools in Illinois, you know, for reasons of, you know, it's racist, it's sexist, it's all of these other things. And so the article that I wrote is basically about how that's kind of an insane idea. And my assessment is usually history education can always be improved. And I'm always open to conversations about that. But if you see a problem, the last thing we should be doing is, you know, stopping the education of history.
Exactly. Exactly. We're opening up the phone lines, 503-589-1220. We're going to take our first call. Good morning. Welcome to the conversation. What questions do you have this morning?
Guess who?
Hello, Art.
Good morning, Stacey. Good morning, James.
Good morning.
Boy, hey, got a great respect for you and doing what you're doing, because we know that fake news exists and we need to expose the fake history, because if you don't understand where you came from, you're never going to improve or make the kind of changes that need to be made to end the mistakes. And so, James, yeah, boy, I remember my college days, which was a long time ago. I'm 64. But history, of course, was quite different in the textbooks. And now, those who are in charge definitely publish stuff that just is fake. And so it's really essential for us to end this fake history stuff, because it's actually ruining our country. And so, James, you're to be commended. My question to you, because I have a favorite talk show host who believes, like you, that, you know, the information needs to be true and accurate. And are you familiar with PragerU and his efforts to actually educate college and high school students on the real facts instead of this fake history that is being pushed upon our young people and our college students?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. I've recommended PragerU videos to a number of people. And what's great about the PragerU videos is that they cover history and government and politics and even art. So it's a wide variety of really interesting information you can get from those videos.
And yet they've been censored.
Yes.
They've had a hard time getting their information out. Thank you, Art. We're going to take another phone call. Good morning. Welcome to the conversation this morning.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Good. Is this Josh?
This is Josh.
Welcome to the conversation. What would you like to add this morning?
Thank you. So, great job. I love that you have established your own platform and having your own domain and kind of allowing for your own channel of information to be accessed and for you to basically have your own platform. That's extremely important right now with the things that you're doing and the actions that you're taking. Nobody's going to ever be able to take that away from you. So that's really important, and I commend you for that. The thing I wanted to route back to, so I was listening earlier when you guys were talking about the fake New York Times and the misrepresentation of what they published was actually wrong and false, mm-hmm. and they did a retraction. So it's not about them having real and right information anymore. They need to mispublish so they can spread it out. The coverage of who they're going to be covering sees that, sees it to be true. Most people don't dive into articles. Most people don't read and really go beyond the headline. And they take that headline and say, oh, it's the New York Times. Racism's real. It's active. You know, hide in your houses. It's coming, you know, or whatever the article says. And then they take that and then they fuel some of these social systems and social projects that they have going on to inflame and kind of justify their actions, like similar to what the Antifa people are doing. So they're using those articles and using that misinformation, even though it gets a retraction later, they don't care because they're using that initial push, which is going to have far more coverage than the retraction itself.
Josh, so I think
it serves its purpose.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. What they bet on is that way more people are going to see the initial post than the retraction. You're absolutely right about that.
And that's what we're facing with the censorship and even, you know, the doctors trying to come out against some of the misinformation going on with the COVID and the CDC mm-hmm. numbers. And they've recently done their revisions and stuff. And it's just really fascinating. So I think people need to understand your website, historykillers.com, is extremely important because that's the future, is that independent domain era, getting off of Google, getting off of Facebook, getting off of Twitter, because they're actively censoring things like this that is real information, you know, and I'm sure you have a nice bibliography and stuff like that on there to where mm-hmm. people are seeing actual history
right
and being rewritten. And so I just wanted to congratulate you on that.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Josh, for adding to the conversation. And I just want to do a little plug. Josh is joining the conversation tomorrow morning. You'll be in the studio co-hosting with me. You want to tell us who we're bringing along with us tomorrow?
Yes, I'm bringing another guy named Josh Buchwald. He's with One's Purpose. He deals with support systems for the human trafficking and sex trafficking going on locally in the area, and dealing with some of the victims and the preventative measures that they're taking. So it's a really big issue. Portland is the number two sex trafficking capital. Vegas is number one. Portland is number two. And that's right in our back door. So it'll be an interesting conversation for
sure.
All
right. Well, thank you, Josh. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. Bye.
And so I just want to thank you, James, for joining the conversation today. Again, give us your website where people can go and get this information, find these articles, stay informed.
Yeah, so they can find my History Killers articles at newdiscourses.com, but they can find those works as well as a whole bunch of other of my writings and articles and essays at historykillers.com.
Do you do any kind of Zoom trainings or anything? I know a lot of people have done that. I know you do lectures and things like that. Have you gotten into any of that?
That may be coming. I've mostly done in-person lectures, but I made a video lecture over the summer for fall term for an American Revolution class, and I could see doing more of that.
Okay, well, keep us posted. As you have new articles coming out, let us know. We'd love to have you on, and maybe we'll take more calls.
People,
I'm sure they're intrigued by the articles that you're writing. Thank you so much. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. Boy, the hour goes so fast. Maybe we should go to an hour two. Would you like that? Would you continue listening if the morning show went to a second hour? Well, we're looking into that. Maybe by the 1st of October, we'll branch out. What do you think? You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. Remember, no matter what you're facing today, over, under, around, or through, you and I, we're overcomers. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning.